So welcome to module two of MongoDB's Jumpstart. You've got documents.
Almost forgot.
It's not that I forgot. I was like pausing because I wanted to have emphasis on that little phrase. You've got documents. It just sounds so exciting.
You know what's sad is that there's probably people watching this that don't understand where that joke comes from.
If you stay tuned till the last module, we will explain what that means. So in this module, we're going to get started using MongoDB and then take a look at some of the queries that you can get.
Yep.
But before we dive into that, there was a few questions that popped up in the chat that were extremely interesting.
Yep.
And one of them was about data types of data that you can store in your database.
Yeah, so this came from the last question. I believe someone asked if the format's supported, and I think they meant the types on the fields and not necessarily the BSON serialization format. But actually, if you look at this website here, so it's right in the MongoDB documentation, but we can look at the BSON types. We'll see that we have the different types that are actually supported in the actual data itself. So similar to if your SQL database, you have different data types in those fields. It's similar to that.
So I can even have things like timestamps, regex expressions.
Yep.
Right into the database, right?
Yep, right.
And it will treat it as that, including numbers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, well, so that's and it's just natively supported. So what you would expect in the database.
Fantastic. And there was another question that popped up that was very interesting. We talked about when it is good to use Mongo. But there's the important question that's contrarian. When is it not good to use Mongo?
Yeah, definitely. So it's definitely specific to your scenario. And I wouldn't say, hey, you should follow this like a religious book or anything like that. It's more of the, it's really specific to your scenario. So I would take this as general and not really it could open up a huge philosophical discussion. But I would say, I'll talk about an example, but if you think about MongoDB stores everything in a document. If you can't hold what you want to know about a specific thing on one piece of paper, on one document, then it might not be the best fit. Now let's talk about the scenario with the bank and the account holders. Mm-hmm. Now say that the bank wanted to do joint account holders, where you had more than one account, more than one person that has the same account. So now we have an issue where we were assuming that the root entity was one person. Mm-hmm. And now we have two persons that have one account. So it works well when you have a one-to-many relationship. Now there's things you can do to kind of to work around this. And it depends on how much of those workarounds you're doing, whether or not you feel like this is a good fit for you. So in that scenario, you could either do something where you have another person and store the ID of that account into their document and say, well, this is a joint account. You could also do something where every person could be a account holder and it could just have person one and person two. And that's another way to handle it. But at the end of the day, it's really that first entity is one single thing, and it can be related to many other things. But when you try to do reverse, many to many, you can have a little bit more difficulty trying to fit that with the MongoDB database, if that kind of makes sense.
All right. So let's get back to this module. And in this module, we're going to show you how you can run MongoDB on your local machine. How to load some bulk data into that instance, and then how to use the interactive shell to do a few queries.
Yep.
So we're going to basically, in the third module, continue with using the interactive shell and show you a few more advanced queries that you could do.
Yep.
But for the moment, in this module, we're going to show you first how to actually run MongoDB on your local machine.
Yep.
Now, Steven already has it installed, but you can go get it from the website yourself. And use the installer to put it on your desk.
Yep.
You can do that on your own time or after this module in the 10-minute break. But Steven already has it installed on his machine, and he's going to show us where it is and what comes with Mongo right away.
Sure. So the thing to take note is that MongoDB works on virtually any operating system. I don't know of one that's popular that it doesn't work on. So if you're using Linux or if you're using Mac or if you're using Windows, there's going to be some slight differences in how you install it. And we're actually going to install it on Ubuntu at the end of this MVA. But if we take a look, if you go to the MongoDB website, you'll see that you have all these installation guides for most major distributions of Linux, as well as OS X, Windows, and enterprise versions of MongoDB as well. Now, when you're working with OS X and Windows, you could either use installers that are prepackaged, which are standard wizards that you could just install. You could also use Chocolaty if you use that package manager.
I love Chocolaty.
It's
amazing. Mm. It's one of those. So for those of you who don't know what Chocolaty is, it's a package manager for Windows. It's fantastic. I'm absolutely in love with it. And pretty much I use Chocolaty to install almost every type of software on my machine. Yep. And that includes things like text editors, MongoDB, Python, Node.js, all those runtimes. I just use Chocolaty. And it puts them all nicely in one location for one single path addition to my path.
It's like a NuGet manager or a pip manager for just all your stuff Windows. Now, Mac has the same thing with Homebrew. And that's also the similar idea where you can pull all these cool developer resources, these runtimes, libraries, tools, and you just install it with Homebrew on your Mac machine. We'll use for Ubuntu, and I believe other Debian systems as well, they use APT, which is a package manager for Linux. And that's all we'll install on Ubuntu at the end of this course. So just to give you some perspective, there's a few different ways to install it, depending on the system that you're using. I have a Windows box right here, so that's what I'm using. We'll show you where things end up. But it's not very much different from any other Unix or Linux system.
That's right. Cool. So let's take a look at some of the binaries that are installed.
Yeah, definitely. So when you're looking at MongoDB, your installation, so you're going to go to your C, and let's see here. Your program files, it's just Mongo, sorry, not x86, your 64-bit program files. And so if you go into bin, so this is what your, let's see if I could zoom in here. Awesome, I love zoom in. There we go. So now we can see that that's three, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Two for
Steve. Two? Two for eight. Awesome. We're counting the number of awesomes.
Yeah, there's this thing that... So apparently in the last MVA that I did, I kept on saying the word awesome, and it was too much at one point. So our colleague in the back kept on starting a count this time around to see how many awesomes I would say. Four. Now we're at four. And up until me discussing this topic, and I refuse to say the word anymore, but if I do, please point it out in chat, it'll be hilarious. Steven was beating me on the count for said word.
So I don't know who's going to be worse. We'll see.
So keep a can on the chat. Definitely something that you're going to call me out on. If you want, you can even call me out on Twitter about it, too.
Yeah, probably. Our phones are off, though. But we'll see. So anyways, let's get back to it. So now, when you install MongoDB, you have Mongo. You have a variety of different executables. Obviously, on Linux, you're not going to have the .exe. You'll just have the name of the executable, but they're about the same. So now, what we'll see is if you have Mongo or MongoD, so each of these are different tools and different parts of MongoDB. So the actual MongoDB database is Mongod. Or MongoD. Sometimes I call it Mongod. I don't know why. It's actually MongoD.
I guess the D stands for daemon.
Daemon something. I know. Yeah, it does Mongo database or something. I'm not exactly sure. So there's MongoD, and then you have MongoExe, so the regular Mongo, and that's actually your CLI. Then we have MongoDump, which is something to dump out binary. Your binary dump, your actual BSON of your database. And then we also have Mongo Export, which actually exports to CSV or to JSON.
So that could be very handy if I have a small database that I'm working with and I want to move it to another platform, another product.
Yep.
Or even just if I want to load it up in Excel, I can just straight up use it.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Just pump it out, which is really easy. So it's cool. Mongo Import we'll be using a couple times during this MVA to import some data so we can get things started. Mongo Restore, where we'll actually restore to restore anything that you've exported. Mongo Stat is gives us the status of MongoDB instances, master slave replication, a lot of different things like that. Mm-hmm. And Mongo Top is tells us some status and performance issues.
So it's like the top tool in Linux. Linux.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So cool. So now what we'll do is to start up Mongo, you'll run MongoD. And then we'll connect to it with Mongo, the Mongo CLI, which is just Mongo. Mm-hmm. So I'll open up my command prompt, and we'll see that we have, I'm going to go ahead and push into the MongoDB directory. So now, if you install onto some Linux systems, Mac OS 2 will also do, just put it in your path, so that you don't have to go into the directory. You can also do it on Windows, but it doesn't happen automatically for you. So go into here, and we'll see that we have all of our, got to go into the bin. There we go. So we have all of our exes or executables here.
Now, I have a question. Before you start MongoD, what's actually taking place here? Is MongoD the server? Is it one database? How is it structured?
Yeah, sure. So when we look at the way MongoDB is structured, it starts with a database. So if we actually, I think we have a diagram.
Yeah, here. We have a diagram that I'd love
to check out. So if you look, we have a MongoDB server, which is the actual MongoD process. Mm-hmm. And then within that MongoD process, we have different databases. And those databases can be, you know, you have a database for a bank, maybe a database for a flower shop. There can be multiple databases, and generally these databases have very different data inside them.
All running in the same server.
All running on the same server. And then within those, we have columns, or not, sorry, not columns.
Collections. I knew this was going to come up.
I know. Someone's probably going to ask, because I drew this document up. Full disclosure, I drew this myself. As you can tell. So call is collection, and it could have n number of collections within the database. Now, someone's going to ask what the limit is. I don't know what the limit is for number of collections.
I think it probably changes as you shard the database as well.
It could change, yeah. I would say just look up the documentation there. I don't know off the top of my head. But those are akin to tables that you would have in a SQL database, mm-hmm. except for the fact that you can't really join information between these collections. You just can't do them on the server. We can have multiple number of collections, and that's where we'll actually load up our bank data into a bank collection, and that'll be within the database which lives on that MongoDB server. Mm-hmm. That server is going to run locally, and we'll connect to it through a port.
So how do we run that server?
Okay, cool. Glad that you asked. We kind of need to do that, right? So now if you head over back to your command prompt, you're just going to go ahead and run Mongo, and what you'll see is that we have... we might have had an error here. MongoD, because we need to run our server and not our
first,
client.
That's right.
And we'll see, I got an error. This is great because this is one of those errors I kind of expected, so I know what to do. Hopefully one of the ones I don't know don't pop up during the MVA, we'll see. we'll see that we have here that we have DB path doesn't exist. So by default, MongoDB wants a directory to store its on-disk files. Mm-hmm. And by default, it's data DB. I believe it's the same thing on Unix as well and Linux. So you can also change it by using the --/ DB path. So if I did MongoD DB path C temp, then it would ask for C temp does not exist, right? So all I have to do is really just, I forgot what the name of that path was. It's data DB. So I could do make dir data DB. Okay, and now I've made that folder, and now I can start MongoD, and we'll see that now it's up and running.
There was a question on the chat that asked, how is this database represented on the disk? Can you show us what data-db looks like?
Data-db, what do you mean?
The place where...
Data/db, sorry.
Yes, my bad.
I
meant slash, it's the same one-letter difference.
I mean, to be honest, it's an implementation detail. As far as what the journal is, as opposed to what the BSON file is.
That's right.
At the end of the day, it becomes the BSON. As far as what the internal representation is on the journal, and when it goes from the journal to the persistent storage, I don't really know what that internal thing is. I just know that at the end of the day, your data is stored as BSON, mm-hmm. and it just looks like these little J these underscore files here.
But I can still pass any other folder as well. Let's say that I want to put this folder on an SSD drive or something that had higher performance. Would that
exactly.
be a good idea?
Yep. So you could say, hey, instead of dbpath that, you could either do like whatever mount directory on Linux or whatever, whatever drive that you have on your Windows machine that is it could be an SSD or it could be something more high performant. We'll actually talk about using an SSD instance in the cloud that could just provide a little more performance for your MongoDB database. But yeah, so you could switch dbpath to anything you want, which makes it really flexible as far as wanting to be able to store your data into something that's not your root directory. Now, what you'll notice, too, is that one thing, if you're using this on Linux, I believe on Mac, I get this issue pretty frequently. So you want to do a sudo before to make that directory. So if you want to do like data and db, on a lot of systems, you can't just do that. You have to use sudo to make that. So you probably just do sudo make directory to get that to work. Cool, so I'll go ahead and run the MongoD process. So now our server is running. And the default port, if I do remember, and I don't remember off the top of my head, it's fine, I'll have to figure it out in a bit. But it runs on a specific port number, which is just the MongoDB default port. And so it's connected via TCP, and what we'll do is we'll connect with our client. So just pop open another command prompt here. And we'll say, okay, well, let me push into go to the MongoDB folder. Again, if you have this on your path, you don't really need to do this. Program files, MongoDB standard, bin for all the binaries, and we'll do Mongo. Cool. So now we've connected to the MongoDB shell. Mm-hmm. So this is the command line interface that we could use to interact and administer the database as well.
And this command line, is it using JavaScript? I heard JavaScript was the way?
It's basically JavaScript. It looks really similar to the Node.js library, actually. Little different, but it's JavaScript. It's like a JavaScript reactive shell, but there's some cool like commands, like for example, like show DBs, for example, and it'll show us all the DBs. So it takes commands, but it takes a lot of JavaScript too. So for example, I could do var x equals Stephen Edward, and X Stephen Edward.
Oh, so wow.
It's actually a JavaScript console. So it's actually kind of cool. So if you're used to using an interactive shell, like for Node or something, you'll feel right at home. So it's kind of neat. Now, if we want to show, we showed the databases, and what you'll notice is that it says connected to test. So we make by default, it just makes a database for us. And so we can do a help too, and we'll see, okay, well, we have all the helps that you need. And what you notice is that if you want to help about DBs, to help about that, it's actually a function on these. So you can say like, oh, DB help. And you have all this stuff on operations on databases. You can clone database, you can do all this stuff. Get the name, do a lot of operations, administrative task. So it's kind of cool because we can administer our database with JavaScript, which I think is kind of neat.
And so, you could tell it to flush stuff to the database.
Yes, exactly. We can flush stuff to the database. So it's actually pretty nice. So and then we could also show collections. I believe that helps. So now there's nothing because we didn't make a collection yet. Mm-hmm. So
but this would show the collections for the test database.
Yes, exactly, for the test database. So now let's go ahead and load up some data. Mm-hmm. So to do that, we're going to go use Mongo import. And I believe I did. So Rami, I'm using my MongoDB MVA GitHub here. And that has like all the resources and stuff that I'm using. So just FYI, if you're wondering, hey, where are you getting this information? That's where I'm getting it from. I repoed it to my desktop. There's also a link on the break slides. So if we go to MongoDB MVA, and we'll see that in the getting started, I have this bankdata.json zip. So this is just some pre-made test data that I've created. And it's actually created by a dummy program that I think I point to from my GitHub. But basically, it just randomly creates people and accounts and creates some associations with them, dumps it out into JSON, we can pull it in, suck it back up through Mongo import. So I'll go ahead and extract it and take that data out.
Is there any other format that you could use besides JSON?
Yeah, so for the next one, and you know, honestly, I don't think JSON's probably, so if you use JSON, you want to have like JSON object after object after object, kind of like a row of like of that. So instead of having, you know, you could have like embedded stuff in it, but it should just be a JSON object followed by a JSON object. I kind of made a little bit of a mistake here and made it into JSON array, which is fine. It just has a size limitation. Whereas like when you do it like that, you can also use CSV as well, which is just row delimited data. You can make huge amounts of data in a file, and it'll be fine because you can just read it line by line. And Mongo import doesn't have any problems with that. Mm-hmm. So see the documentation that JSON array has a little bit of a data limitation, but that's fine for what we're going
to
be using.
But regardless, Mongo import is the fastest way to load data into MongoDB without having to write any code.
Exactly. So we don't have to actually write something like for a driver application, for a driver language, and say, oh, I'm going to insert table, insert, insert, insert. You could certainly do that. It's going to slow you down because you actually have to write that program to do that when you already have it with Mongo import. So it makes it pretty easy just to prime it up, get it started, and we could just get jamming out on queries really quick. So let's go ahead and do that. So I'm going to grab this path here in the Git repository to bankdata.json. And we'll do a Mongo import. And I might have forgotten what import here.
Let's see the helpline just to see what it looks like.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So yeah, Mongo import --json array, which is what we're going to use. And we have the collection name, which is collection docs, and this little arrow thing to say, oh, this is the JSON file you want. And the DB, which if you don't put that, it'll pick the default DB, but I could pick test. And the host, you don't really need to put host. If you don't put a host, it'll just assume that you want the local machine's MongoDB.
Right.
So let me give this a shot. Doing it live. So let's see, Mongo import JSON array. This thing here. Didn't mean to do that. I have to do the little caret. Let me see if I hold on. JSON array. I need the DB collection docs. We'll call it bank data for the collection, and we'll import. We'll add that JSON data in there. Whoop. Access denied. Because that's a folder. And so can't do that to a folder. That's why it's access denied. Connected to our database. And we should soon start to see that data start flowing in. So we'll see 400 records at 50 a second. And there's 50,000 records in this database, which is fine. Actually, we don't even need to have all the data in there, but I'll let it run anyways. And what we'll do is we'll start talking about the queries that we can do. And it doesn't necessarily stop us from reading from the database as this is going on. So let's go ahead and connect to the database with another MongoDB or Mongo CLI. So let's see, Mongo. Program files MongoDB standard bin. I really should have just put it on my path. It would make my life a lot easier. Okay, so we'll do Mongo. Here we go. So now, remember we can see the collections, right? So you see that we have new collection, bank data, and that actually lets us have the, it's actually where all that bank data is coming from, like all the things that we're doing with Mongo import right now. So for example, I can go DB, dot bank data, DB is the current database, bank underscore data, and I can do functions on that collection. So bank data is this collection object, so I can do like, for example, count on it. And it tells me how many records I have in it right now. Right now I have 4,253. If I do it again, we can see that the number is slowly rising because we're at this moment, we're actually importing stuff to it, right? So,
and this is all happening live, so we can keep recalling the same count method.
Yep, and we'll see
and
that
a different number.
Different number keeps coming up, and now we can see it as that's going on. Mongo imports is importing all those data lines. So now I'm actually concerned because the other file is going to be actually quite bigger. It might be going slower because it's JSON, but we'll see. Okay. So why don't we just do some simple queries here? Let me make sure I didn't really miss anything. So let's see. So what we can do is we can start just talking about how we can do basic queries onto Mongo. So for example, if I do DB dot, so all the queries before I start with that really start with this find method. And there's also a very convenient one called find one. Find one will just give us the first matching array or first matching document. So if I do find one, for example, I'll get one record. So now this looks very familiar from what we had earlier, right? And that we're talking about in module one. I have a theoretical bank, and that bank has people, and that people has accounts. And that account data has, each account has its own metadata about the type of the account, the balance of the account, and the currency for that account as well. And
the account balance here is actually a number, and there's no string quotations around
no
it.
No quotations. I believe it's a double, stored as a double. So it's kind of similar to what you would expect in JSON. You know, the numbers, the literals, the booleans, they don't really have quotes around them, and then the strings usually do. And so that's our basic query. It just really just picks out the first entity or the first document.
Now, there's something in that query that sort of grabs my attention, and that's the ID field.
Yep.
So what can you tell me about object ID? Is this a class? It seems like it's a class.
So this object ID is like it is a class that's in like MongoDB drivers. And if I actually, I believe I could do, I forgot what I can do. I think it's object ID. I can query by it. So I can say if I want object ID, this number, it's actually making computation off of this key.
I see.
So it's not actually that key. If you actually look in the MongoDB drivers, you'll get a different value, mm-hmm. The raw value that comes out of this object ID function. But you can query by saying, hey, I want ID, object ID, and you can just find that. So for example, I believe if I just grab this, pull it off and say, okay, well, db.bankdata. And I'm going to do something really crazy, and we'll explain why it looks like this. But I'm actually going to pass in an object. I'll say I want ID. And say this. And I will pick, I'll use this indexer here, which just helps me display it like nicely, pretty.
Yeah, because the assumption is that we're only showing the first one in the results.
Well, I could not just an assumption, I could do a count. And that's not an assumption for Mongo. That's actually guaranteed because it is an ID field. It's the only guarantee that you have. Anything okay. else is up to you. So if I want to do by first name or last name, mm-hmm. then I'll get that.
But if I wanted to use my own type of ID, let's say I wanted something that was slightly more geolocated or had more of a timestamp, can I set my own ID?
You can set your own ID, but it's not like seen as a... If you add another one, like for example, if I wanted a key to be a first name, combination first name, last name, if I add another James Smith, I can't add something in Mongo to be
especially
like,
with a name as common as James Smith. Yeah.
but right. The point is that it's kind of like self-imposed, really.
Okay.
There's a lot of wrappers that Mongo drivers, for example, Mongoose for mm-hmm. Node.js. We won't talk about that too much today, but it's really kind of like the schema wrapper that creates some enforcements that you have in NoSQL databases.
Yeah, so there was a question that popped up in the chat room about validation and enforcing types.
Mm-hmm.
With sort of language-level drivers like Mongoose, that can actually take place. But in the database, there's no enforcement. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, if you try to stuff, there's no enforcement there. Like, it's not seen as like a, you know, it would just replace it. It would say, okay, yeah. I guess this is a string now, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at, not a driver, but think of like, and you could look this up, and we'll talk about MongoDB for Node, but then we'll also talk about Mongoose. Well, we won't talk about Mongoose, but it is there. And Mongoose is like this, what you're asking for, kind of like this validation wrapper around that language driver, which says, well, what is the entity that you're putting in here? Let's keep this consistent, kind of keeps everything from going out of control. Because although you want flexible schemas, you also don't, you want a little bit of sanity. And that kind of gives you that sanity where you can define what are those types that's in that object so that when you throw in a MongoDB, it doesn't override.
So you can sort of get the best of both worlds in that way. Your database is not strictly enforcing the type.
Mm-hmm.
Your code is. So you can change your code and then your database won't just explode.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's exactly the point. So that's the beauty about it is that you can take this this wrapper. You take these. It's on you. Mm-hmm. And there's these tools on the client that will help you do that and keep you sane. But if you need to change it, that's an option as well. It's just a change in your code rather than having to actually change your database and have some constraints on that side, which makes things a little bit more difficult.
And is this ID underscore ID column property, is it reserved? Is it always there in every?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I mean, I believe you can set your own ID if you want, and it'll override it. But it needs to be unique. And I wouldn't recommend touching it because MongoDB makes unique ones. So it's I would just keep it how it is. Excuse me. So, all right. So now let's do a couple queries for just some stuff here. So let me double check what my examples say so I don't go too far off. So we'll just do a fine. So for example, if I do DB bank data, and like I did before with find one, except just find with nothing in it. Mm-hmm. Well, first I'm going to do count, like I did before. So remember that DB bank data is a collection. Find returns a collection, and I could do count on that collection. So that's how that works. So I can do count, and we'll see that we have 2,641. I believe this number keeps going up because we're still inserting.
We're still inserting.
Yeah, it's actually taking a little bit longer than what I expected, unfortunately. So I might do the other insert for the other module offline. But anyway, so we'll see that it's matching everything. The reason why the number's going up is because we're still inserting on Mongo import. But if I do find, I'll get all this data. I get a ton of it. So I could do find, and I could pick, using an indexer, the fifth one. Or I could pick the sixth one. Well, notice is that we're good citizens and we decided to keep our data consistent. Honestly, there's nothing stopping you from find the seventh or the eighth element here being not having a last name or having a middle name and the previous one not having a middle name.
So you can even have anonymous bank accounts.
Yes, you can just not have it and it's not an issue. It's just more of, you know, do you really want that? You know, it's on you to keep that consistency, right? So that's kind of a little bit of an issue there. So now, what we can do too is we can do the counts. Now we can do things like filtering as well. So let's see, what if we want to get all the accounts with a certain last name? Maybe we have a family that's all related in this bank, and we want to see who all the accounts are. So what we can do is we can say, well, let's see, DB bank data, and not count, but find. Now remember, Rami, this is not like SQL at all, right? Like,
no, it looks like as if you're putting in a JSON element into your query.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's a query object. Okay. And the idea of this query object where I can put my queries in what seems to be a JSON object rather than, where, greater than, or, you know, join with all the stuff that you would see in SQL. So now all I really have to do is just put the field name. I could put in quotes or I could not put in quotes because that's just what JavaScript allows, right? Yeah. So I could say I want first name to be, last name to be Smith. So it's pretty straightforward, right? Yep. I can close this out and I can grab, if I hit it, I'll get all tons of information, right? It's kind of hard to read.
Let's see what the count is.
100.
100.
That's because the tool I used to create it does a combination of first names and last names, and it clashes them together. So it's always going to be 100 for each last name. So I could pick, for example, I know that Martinez is a name that's on that list. So you get another 100.
It's also,
right?
100.
But if I picked, first name, you won't see that there's anything in there because nobody has a first name. It's not a common first name, right? So 0. So it's pretty straightforward, and we could look and we could confirm that we actually have someone with that last name by picking the last name here, picking index. So I could pick anything between 0 and 90, 101 because I have 100 elements. So I could pick 50, and I could see that this person is Joe Martinez. So I was able to, like before, query for that Martinez, and now I have that count data right in one, all right? So now I can also do other things too. Like for example, I can let me make sure I'm not going too far here. Okay. So now, what if I wanted to do? Remember before how you mentioned how we have how we don't want to get everything.
Yeah, we want to get some of the data that's in there. So let's say that I wanted to get one of the accounts for a Joe Martinez, for example.
Okay, we can do that. So for example, I can say, I want to get Martinez, right? I want to get that last name. Mm-hmm. And instead of getting everything about that record, I can add a projection. So a projection will tell me what fields do I want to keep. Mm-hmm. So I can say, I want to keep the first name, and I'll indicate that by one. Mm-hmm. I want to give a last name. I can indicate that by one as well. So first I'll do this. And we'll see that now, if I pick a random one in the array, I'll just get the first and last.
And it'll also include the object ID.
It includes the object ID by default, yes.
Okay.
I think there's a way I can just say first name. I believe I can do, let's see. I'm kind of guessing here. I never have to do this because really always kind of want the ID, but we can say a zero. If it's zero or negative one. Yep, and there we go.
And zero, it's gone.
Yeah, so now it's gone. So now I have no idea which document this is, but if you really want that, you can get it to you. By default, it'll add the ID. So let's see, you wanted to see if you can keep just the account, and we can just say accounts. So accounts and one. So our accounts is an embedded document. It's actually not just its own value.
Yeah.
So if now I do it, I can grab the, I'm just picking a random element here off the array to make it pretty. And now I just have the account and obviously the ID itself. Now, if I want to keep a specific account, that's a little different. We'll do that actually in, we'll do that in just a little bit, just because we have to match which one we want. We can't just say, give me an arbitrary account. What we'll say is, hey, give me an account with a query of that type embedded. If that kind of makes sense. So what we'll do is we can also use this in like a code-like fashion too, which is kind of neat. So now let's say that, remember that I was doing like var x equals, and I believe x is already defined. Oh, nope. Var x equals Steven, right? So we can still do this. It's an interactive shell, right?
Yeah.
So why don't we just try to make a little bit of code that does this? So we can actually do, like say that you want to test to see if something worked, to see if something didn't. So I can find all the last names of the person that's, the people that are Smith, right? We call them Smith person. So I'm just going to copy this out to be a little quicker. So I have this var Smith persons, and these are the people with last name Smith. And I'll find it, whatever, and we'll store it into this var Smith persons. I can do Smith persons. Dot count, and you'll see that it's the same collection. It's just stored. It's kind of persistent. So I could kind of hold on to that if I want to. So now I'll say I want to iterate through it. I can actually do this right in the console. So I can just do something like, I can just do for and do through do it through the count. So for example, for var I equals zero, I is less than Smith persons. Dot count, I plus plus. And it gets a little, it's all inline, so it's a little bit different. But for example, I can do enter, and it'll just let me continue. And I could do, for example, print. And so in the shell, it's actually print. It's not console.log. But I can do print, and I could say Smith persons at I dot first name. So I could just grab it right off of here, and I could just do a print on that. And I could say, oh, here's a space plus the last name, so Smith persons at I dot last name, close that out. And it's nice because I have this like handy little close, these little matching brackets here.
Nice.
Close that out. And there we go. So I can print out just the names, similar to how you would use it in an application.
Yep.
But kind of just in the interactive shell itself, which is kind of neat.
So you can definitely use the interactive shell to test out new queries that you might have. Or even just to get some quick stats for something very specific that you're looking for.
Yep.
And not necessarily always have to write application code to get that stuff out.
Yeah, well, say that your boss asked you, you know, tell me how many people in our company or in our bank has this type of account or this type of last name or this type of match that you want. Well, instead of just writing the app, you know, and going into your program and writing this code and running it, compiling it, maybe if you're using a language that compiles, just jump on the console and you can just code. So it makes it really friendly for developers because, excuse me, this is carbonated. You don't have to worry about these different syntaxes or whatever. If you know JavaScript, you can just do it, which is really awesome because then you could just, you know, get it done and not have to worry about it. So that's kind of the beauty here is that we can just use what we're already familiar with and just kind of query against this database and kind of get it done. So now we can do, let me do one more. I know our next module kind of talks into how we can grab these specific modules, but we can also query. So let's say I want to query into all people who have a last name or account. So I could say accounts dot account actually, you know what I could even do? I can pick a specific value for their account balance. Now, I know someone's going to say, hey, euros don't go that far in decimals. I think I was kind of lazy and I didn't really want to like format it. So before someone makes fun of me for that, I already know. Okay, so for example, I want to do accounts where the account balance is equal to this specific number. Oop. And let me not store that into this variable, but just print it out. So by default, Mongo, the MongoDB CLI printed out. Great. And now I'll see that the count, since it's a really specific number, I use a random number generator. It's really only going to be one. That's just the way that the data is kind of organized. And I can grab it and I can say, OK, well, who is this person? Well, it's the same exact person that I had before. And I have this account, that's matching, which we can find. We could say, OK, well, here's the number we're looking for. And here's the number here. Here's the matching one. Now, Rami, you might say, well, how do I get that? I want this one, right? Well, it's easy. So all you really have to do is just do the projection, but we'll do the projection with a kind of the shortcut. So in the next module, we'll use something called LMatch. But for this one, we can just do something pretty simple and just do this dollar sign, which says, hey, give me the matching embedded document for the thing that I queried for within this embedded document here, which is kind of, I know it's a roundabout way of saying that, just give me the account that matched. So let's do it. So if we'll do account here, accounts dot dollar sign, and I'll say one, meaning that I want that matching account and that's all I want. So if I close that and then get the get that matching one, so just the first one, I get that matching account. So now I just get that account and I know that's part of this document, which is not, all other stuff isn't listed. And again, I could just add, if I want the first name or the last name, I'll just say, well, give me the first name, one, and last name, one. And we got it.
So. Fantastic. And just to clarify, there's a question that came up in the chat room. That one basically means yes.
Yep. So if we do zero, like we did earlier,
it will hide that.
Ooh. What just happened there? Let's see. It was just working. That's crazy. Let's see. One more. That worked. We just did zero a second ago. Let's see. Oh, you know why? You don't need to do that. So I think just for ID.
Yeah, I think if you just don't put
it. Because you just don't put it. Yeah. That just means that you want it, right? But if I do ID zero, it won't include ID.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I just don't include it, mm-hmm. it'll just sit on. But yes, that one just means, yes, please give me that one. So if you don't put it, it's assumed that you don't want it. So.
All right. Well, there was another question that came up on the chat room. And it was about how to write a query and then get the results to a file. Is that possible within the shell? Can you straight up write to JavaScript within the shell, to files?
Writing out to a file? I don't know, actually. I don't know if you can do a print. Well, the thing is that print is directly attached to the console. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I can print out or do like an output. It could be that you can do something with the Mongo command line.
Yeah.
And then say, execute this thing. And mm-hmm. then whatever you print out, for example, if you want to batch it or something, you can just say, well, batch, and then take that output from that thing and just put it into a file. So I would be surprised if you couldn't, but I don't know right off the top of my head. I don't even think if the help gives us that. But I would think from the command line, you can just say, well, let me run this script over it, and then just get the output from that command that you give it. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. There's just one last thing that I wanted to sort of show before we cap off this module, and that is being able to switch between databases in the SQL. Can you show us an example of that? Because right now it started off with the test database, mm-hmm. and then we might have switched to another one, or we may not have using the Mongo import. How do we actually switch?
Yeah, there's there's this help here. I forgot what it was. It's something. Let's see.
There's use, I believe, is the keyword.
Yeah, use. I believe it's use DBName. There we go. Set current database. I don't remember all these on top of my head, but that's actually pretty cool that you could just explore that. But I could just say, hey, instead of using that one, I can just say use local.
Use a test base or something?
Yeah, so by default, use test. You could just switch to local DB. And so the operations for, like, even if you say, hey, I want to do some operations on that DB, just to DB help. And I believe you can, for example, help, but you could also do, like, DB, I think, get name. This one. There's a few of them that you could do. You could also drop users and add users. So like I mentioned before, remember that this is not just for running queries and things like that, but it's also for administration.
Right.
So like I could add a user. Excuse me, this stuff is really bubbly. I'm going to pick water for the next module because it's a little too much. But so this DB drop user, for example, is an admin thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something that you would normally do for like on a web page.
You can add authentication to each database. You can add the user, a username and password, for example.
Yep.
Let's say that there was a, for very specific machines, you didn't want them to have access to the entire database.
Yeah, there was a question that came up on that.
Came up in the chat.
That came up in chat during the break. So you can, for example, you can lock the database with usernames and passwords, and you could say, okay, well, I just want these specific users to be able to access it. So you give maybe a username to your web server, but you give another different one to maybe your backend web job or something that processes that database. Another thing you can do as well is you can encrypt the connection itself. So for example, if you wanted to use SSL, there's a build of MongoDB, and I think it's available on the latest versions out of the box, but you can say, hey, I want the data coming off the MongoDB wire to be encrypted so that you can't just listen and look at the clear text coming off of it. So there's a few security features like that, as well as MongoDB for Enterprise takes advantage of things in Windows Server and other server operating systems to create those enterprise-grade scenarios that are really important for enterprise companies. So there's a few of those things out there, and so I believe these things kind of came out as iterations in the beginnings of MongoDB. Those things didn't exist, and as you know, obviously as more and more versions came out, they added more and more features to kind of fit those needs for those different application scenarios.
All right. Well, I'm just going to look at the chat room real quick. There's a question that popped up twice, and that is, let's say that you got a sample database from somewhere. You downloaded it from the internet, or it's a CSV file that you imported. How can you query the schema of the document? Do you have to just trust the source that the data follows what they say it does, or is there a way that you can take a look at it manually?
You're talking about sanitizing
or just even looking at what the data looks like. You can just go through, do a find one query, and see what the document actually looks like, right?
Well, so you can't say, hey, I'm just gonna look at this CSV
right
from there. You have to kind of load it first.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you might see something where it might not be safe or you might not trust it, mm-hmm. Then there's a little bit of, you know, you might have to just write an app that says, well, I'm going to look at this before I stuff it into my database to make mm-hmm. sure it's not, like, untrusted or things like that. You know, general security practices, there's a trust barrier between a random file and your system, right? So mm-hmm. you kind of need to be able to check those things out. But as far as being able to just kind of peer into that JSON file and say, oh, this is what I got before actually committing it to your database, so you can only do queries against collections. And it's not a collection if it's not in JSON format and in your database. So what you're really asking is if you can just load that JSON into maybe a JavaScript application and look at it, which is quite simple. If you're using JavaScript, you just kind of open it up, right? Now, if it's a giant JavaScript file or a JSON file, and you know, giant JSON files that you use for Mongo are really this weird like object over object over object, not necessarily one giant JSON array and stuff inside it. Mm-hmm. So if you have that, it makes it hard to load an application because it loads the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had the object versus object versus object, then you can piecewise load it up. And when you piecewise load it up, you could look at each record and you could say, well, this one's okay, go ahead and insert it. This one's okay, go ahead and insert it. So.
All right, fantastic. So that was the end of our second module. Our third module will come online in 10 minutes after a break. And in our third module, we'll be going deeper into MongoDB queries.
Yeah, we'll go in deeper into queries. We'll be using some really interesting operators.
Yep.
And I'll stop drinking soda.
All right. And maybe we'll continue the count of that one word that we keep saying. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back in 10 minutes. Don't go anywhere.